In January, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services changed the childhood vaccine schedule, reclassifying several vaccines from routinely recommended to requiring shared decision-making between parents and clinicians. This shift has created confusion for parents and challenges for clinicians. I'm Stephen Morrissey, managing editor of the New England Journal of Medicine, and I'm talking with Douglas Opel, a professor in the Department of Pediatrics at the University of Washington School of Medicine. Dr. Opel has co-authored a perspective article about communicating with parents about childhood vaccines in a contentious climate. Dr. Opel, could you start by explaining these changes to the childhood vaccine schedule? How were the changes implemented and which vaccines were affected?
The United States Department of Health and Human Services, or HHS, made several changes to the childhood vaccine schedule in January. And what HHS did was really essentially reclassify several vaccines from being routinely recommended to now requiring shared decision-making between clinicians and parents. And there were four vaccines that got reclassified: vaccines that protect against hepatitis A, rotavirus, meningococcal disease, and influenza. Now, the application of the shared decision-making recommendation to these four vaccines now brings the total number of vaccines that have received this designation under the current federal administration to six, with vaccines that protect against hepatitis B and COVID-19 having been given such a recommendation in 2025.
So what does a recommendation for shared decision-making mean in this context?
Well, it's confusing. A commonly used definition for shared decision-making is that when patients or their surrogates, in this case parents, and their pediatric clinician share information, take steps to build consensus about a preferred treatment option, and reach an agreement on that treatment to implement. And when you unpack that definition a bit, what's meant by building consensus is this exploration and incorporation of patient values, preferences, and beliefs to ensure what is done matches the patient or parent's preferences. And so this is why shared decision-making exists and why it is generally an important decision-making process in medicine and helps ensure clinical decisions that have more than one treatment option incorporate and reflect patient preferences. So I think what the intent of this redesignation of these vaccines from a routine recommendation to a shared decision-making recommendation, I think the intent behind this is to make the case that vaccinating or not vaccinating, both are reasonable options. It's sort of a maneuver to sort of reclassify these vaccines as optional.
So what rationale did HHS give for these vaccine schedule changes? Was it simply that, or was there more to it?
It was interesting. There really wasn't any new data, scientific data, around the efficacy or the safety of vaccines that HHS provided to justify this change. There were also the absence of sort of the procedural norms that usually accompany changes like this. And so given that, it's not hard to understand why many pediatric clinicians are struggling with why they ought to adopt these recommendations. I mean, if usually pediatric clinicians, in trying to consider a recommendation like this, that these routinely recommended vaccines are now something they should engage with parents using shared decision-making, they usually request information about why that change has been made and why these now are more in the shared decision-making domain. And because there wasn't that accompanying data, I suspect many pediatric clinicians are having a hard time following that advice.
How do these changes align with broader reforms in vaccine and other public health policy under the Trump administration?
It's been a tumultuous year with respect to vaccine policy. I mean, there's been several changes. This is one of many that I think reflect a general new stance the federal government is taking regarding vaccines. Historically, the federal government and the Department of Health and Human Services have positioned vaccines as critical and central to its public health policy and to help preserve and protect child and public health. And I think they are now retreating from that position and no longer considering vaccines as central to child and public health. And this change sort of is very much in alignment with that retreat from a central focus of vaccines to protecting child and public health. And that, I think, is really quite remarkable and tragic. I mean, there isn't any scientific evidence to justify that retreat. It's out of step with what pediatric clinicians consider to be critical for child health. In fact, the American Academy of Pediatrics has severed its alignment with the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention because they continue to see and justifiably see, given the scientific evidence, that vaccines are critical to protecting child health. So this change is in line with the many others we've seen over the last year that really de-emphasize vaccines in public health policy. And that itself is really, I think, hugely problematic for public health, but particularly for child health.
So you mentioned the American Academy of Pediatrics. How have other professional organizations and state policymakers reacted to these reclassifications?
The American Academy of Pediatrics, with these changes, really has encouraged pediatric clinicians to follow their schedule, the AAP schedule, not the new CDC schedule. And over 200 organizations, professional societies, and other organizations have signed on to the AAP's new schedule. So I think that reflects a consensus among those providing pediatric care of the sort of value still in the schedule as it was, given the science shows that vaccines are incredibly effective and incredibly safe. Nothing changed there to justify a move from a routine vaccination recommendation to a shared decision-making one. So this is why we wrote the articles, because this is a contentious environment that pediatricians are finding themselves in, and frankly, parents are finding themselves in. It thrusts that interaction between pediatricians and parents and talking about vaccines into the spotlight. And we wanted to be able to offer some guidance to pediatricians in particular as they try to navigate this contentious climate.
So finally, in that regard, what strategies can pediatricians and other clinicians use to communicate effectively with parents about vaccines?
One thing I think we encourage pediatricians to remember that what has remained constant amidst all of these changes on the federal level and the sort of turmoil they've caused is that pediatricians remain the most trusted source of reliable information about vaccines for parents. So that has been a constant amidst all of this. And so it's important for us as clinicians to lean into communication strategies with parents that both draw on that trust but also nurture it. So what strategies are those? Well, first, I think we should continue to strongly recommend vaccines. If we wanted to follow this shared decision-making recommendation that federal agencies have now put in place, that doesn't require us to be neutral in this interaction with parents. I mean, in fact, most parents are looking for a recommendation, and we should feel still comfortable in strongly recommending childhood vaccines. So shared decision-making itself doesn't require that neutrality. Second, I think we ought to be careful about expressing a political stance or making overt political references in our interactions and vaccine discussions with parents. This is not the time to alienate parents. We should feel like we can engage with parents about politics if they bring it up as a way to understand and learn more about how those views are influencing their vaccine decision making. But we ought not be overtly political ourselves, because that will only work to erode the trust that we have built over the decades. And then lastly, I think we should really be cautious about proactively or preemptively explaining this controversy regarding the vaccine schedule. And I say that because doing so may backfire by leaving parents from that interaction remembering the controversy rather than the reason why we're explaining it, which is the continued importance of vaccination. So I think a better strategy might be to focus on the fact that the AAP schedule has not changed and we're continuing to follow that. And then, of course, we're already fielding questions from parents, and I think we can expect more as they try to navigate all the information out there that they're hearing from federal agencies and otherwise. And I think motivational interviewing, which is a very patient-centered framework, can be a helpful strategy to respond to these questions. It not only keeps parents' concerns as central, but it's evidence-based and can help parents move along and partner with us and for clinicians to partner with them to move towards vaccination.
Thank you, Dr. Opel. On March 16th, 2026, after this podcast was recorded, a federal judge, in response to a lawsuit brought by the American Academy of Pediatrics and other organizations against the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, temporarily blocked the changes that we've discussed here from taking effect.